I won't let you forget it.
All right. Good morning. I will call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, July 5th, 2016. Before we go to the Pledge of Allegiance, Board, one slight alteration to our agenda. I'm going to move items 2 and 3 under additional items up ahead of item number 1. Rationale for that is we've got somebody with a sick child that they need to get to the doctor, so we're going to try to get this done for them and get them moving on. With that, I would ask everybody to please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. First item is public comment. Number 1 is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items on today's agenda. Is there anybody wishing to do so? And seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll move on.
Items on today's agenda or not on today's agenda?
Say that again, Linda.
Items on today's agenda.
On today's agenda.
I would like to comment on
Absolutely.
That.
Come on up. Linda, start by introducing yourself.
Sure. My name is Linda Merkin. I live at 17185 G.W. Carver Avenue, Gilbert. And what I wanted to comment on was the, I can't find the number now, but it was the drainage district.
It's number 4. It's the next item on the agenda.
Okay. Well, we're here then. Okay. As you know, and I'll be brief, this is about the Bakken Pipeline. And as you all know, in March when the Iowa Utilities Board entered its ruling on that permitting Dakota Access to build the pipeline, Dakota Access said they would not start construction until all of the permits were obtained. And the IUB accepted that and agreed and put that in their permission. Then in May, Dakota Access came back to the utility board and asked them to change their order. And this was after it had been appealed for judicial review. Asked them to change their order because they anticipated that by July or June 16th, the Army Corps of Engineers would have granted all the permissions they needed. The Army Corps, the Iowa Utilities Board went ahead and did that. However, the Army Corps of Engineers has not yet granted permissions to cross under the major rivers, Des Moines and Mississippi being two of them, and have not given any date by which they would do that. So they do not have permission to construct a pipeline throughout 18 counties in Iowa. I would respectfully request that the Story County Board of Supervisors delay this permission until Dakota Access has all the necessary permissions to build a pipeline throughout all of Iowa.
Thanks, Linda. So that leads us, Linda gave us a softball, leading us right into, I'm going to need a motion to recess as Board of Supervisors.
I have a motion to recess so that we could reconvene as the Board of Trustees for our drainage district.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Chief.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. We're in recess as Board of Supervisors. I will now call us to order in our role as Drainage District Trustees. And the first thing that would have to happen is one of you would have to move to untable an item.
I would move that we untable the item on the agenda from last week.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Clinton.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Item is now untabled. So last week we tabled this item because we were seeing drawings that didn't agree with each other. What we had, the drawings we had for secondary roads didn't agree with the drawings that we had for crossing the drainage district. Scott Wall, would you come up and update us on where we are today?
I think you pretty much already hit the issue on the head, which was the original drawing that the Dakota Access submitted did not have the correct elevations along the edges of the document. They were off about 350 feet from what had been submitted for the crossing of R-38. In addition, we didn't get to this point, but the application had not been signed by the applicant.
Okay.
And that's now been done. The drawings now match. The current drawing matches the drawing for the road crossing. and Darren Moon County Engineers told me he satisfied that the drawings are correct.
Yeah, Darren, would you just come up and let us know how you feel about everything? And I'll just remind everybody, including Board Marty, you weren't here when we did this. Back on April 5th, we passed Resolution 1650 as Drains District Trustees, which put all of this in motion and talked about, what, the $7,500 crossing and all the things that would have to be done in order for us to grant final application. Is that right, Scott?
Yeah.
Darren, your thoughts?
They've got the drawing updated. We had the road crossing permit already approved, and that was fine, and it didn't match that, so they got it to match that. So everything's fine as far as the drawing goes. The pipeline will be under the tile far enough we have clearance, so that's what I was mainly concerned about.
Okay.
One of the stipulations early on had to do with notification when work was being done, the county, your office, or someone being or hiring a contractor to actually be able to inspect and so forth. Where are we in that process?
Well, part of that had to do with the pipeline had two kind of operations. They had a pipeline operation, the building operation, and the building operation started on 303rd with the pumping station, and so they didn't have some of the agreements that we had in place with the pipeline portion. They are on board with all those agreements now and with dust control and all that. So all that squared away. We do have a consultant hired for the pipeline inspection. They're sending people up here to look at the pumping station as well. There's not a lot to inspect there, but they're just keeping an eye on things on that for us as well. And like I say, the county personnel will be out there too, checking as much as we can to assist our consultant. But I think we're squared away.
Okay. So I just want to make sure from both of you guys that we're clear on this. This application meets every requirement that we put forward on April 5th as part of Resolution 1650. The pipeline, it does agree with the application we've already granted, Crossing Roads. And there's a clause in here that if at any time the pipeline does not live by the terms of this resolution, we can revoke this permit at any time.
Right.
That was a clause in the original permit. This is simply construction drawing showing how to cross the pipeline.
Okay.
So the drawing is basically giving us a clear vision of how it's going to be laid out. And if there are concerns or issues as far as the drainage tiles and things of that nature, that was why we wanted to have great clarity in that regard from the map that was actually presented to us earlier. Is that probably a fair assessment to say?
Yep.
Okay.
All right. What, Marty, any questions?
No.
All right, board, what's your pleasure? Trustees, what's your pleasure?
In order to continue with the discussion and so forth, I would move that we move forward with the construction permit of the hazardous liquid pipeline as submitted.
Second. Motion second. Further discussion?
Is a representative here from the pipeline, I believe. Is there a possibility that you could kind of give us a little update? I'm curious in terms of where other counties are in terms of the resolution. I know they've been going step by step trying to get this. I certainly want to acknowledge Linda's concern.
Absolutely.
I think it's a very valid concern. It would appear to me that we're talking primarily about two major bodies of water that is under the control of the Corps. So if at some point the conditions are not met to satisfy the Corps, then obviously they're going to have to come in compliance before they will be allowed to cross those entities. So I want to be sure that my understanding of that provision is clear. The question is one of, in the original document, I believe it was stated that they said that until all conditions were being met. Well, my concern basically is everything is a timing issue. It takes a lot of time to coordinate not only construction, but to work through all the individual counties, working with all the different agencies, whether it's state, federal, or what have you. And unfortunately, those things don't always fall into sequence according to whoever is attempting to get the application process. What my primary concern is Story County set certain requirements, you know, for it to come through Story County, and I'm hearing that those requirements have been met and are satisfied, and I think that's where my biggest concern basically lies is how conditions are for Story County if and when it.
Yeah, I think you're right on the money. From my perspective, rightly or wrongly, we did not put in any of our requirements that the pipeline company go get approvals from any other county or any other entity. We said this is what we need to see from Story County, and it looks to me like they've done that. You come up here if you're going to give us any update.
I can take your...
Well, yeah, come up here so we'll get you on...
I can... I'm not supposed to...
That's okay. Just tell us.
That's fine.
As much about my question as you can.
No, that's fine. I'm not a spokesman for the company. I'm their liaison. I can take Mr. Clinton's questions back, and I can formally get you the answers to that. I'm not able to do that today. In my role that I have, I'm not able to do that.
Are you able to even comment and say that several counties have given permission for this process to move forward?
As far as this utility permit,
yeah.
I do know that Webster and Calhoun have it on as an agenda item for today.
Okay. Boone has passed it.
Boone tabled it because of last week's, and it's on tomorrow's agenda.
Okay. All right. Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Further discussion.
Now, coming late to this issue, I think Sheriff Wayne's concerned with the fact that the county has been able to weigh in and had found satisfaction that they have their concerns. Have been both addressing that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, then we'll move on to the question. Clinton?
Aye.
Key?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Passes. With that, I take a motion to adjourn as Drainage District Trustees.
So move.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned as Drainage District Trustees. I'll call us back to order as in our role as Board of Supervisors. Consideration of minutes from June 28th.
Move approval.
Second.
Additions, corrections, thoughts, anything there? Clinton?
Aye.
Chief?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Minutes pass. Personnel actions as listed, Board.
Move approval as listed.
Second.
Discussion? Clinton?
Aye.
Chief?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Consent agenda, Board, please add utility permits 1701 and 1702.
So moved.
As amended.
As amended.
Okay, second.
We have a motion and second on consent agenda. Chief?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Consent agenda passes. No public hearing items today. Additional items, this is where we're making the one adjustment that I mentioned earlier. We're going to consider number 2 and number 3 ahead of number 1, just the timing issue. So, first item before us is consideration of the selection of lender for the sale of bonds in the amount of $1,500,000. Leanne Harder and Lisa Martin. Okay.
Good morning. Thank
Good morning.
You.
Good morning.
Again, shifting the agenda for my benefit. Just a quick recap from your action last week. We did receive 3 bids. This is in regards to selection of a lender for sale of bonds in the amount of $1.5 million to the out-of-state research park. Lisa handed out information sheet on projected TIF revenues. I'll pull it up closer. I'll let her address that, and we can have some further discussions.
So what you have in front of you, the first page is the projections for the 2018 budget. It's based on 2016 assessed value projections, because as we talked about before, TIF is a...
it's your favorite thing.
Yeah. it's an accounting nightmare. But if, in this example, if you guys decide Your typical 50% is what you take in.
Which we've set by policy as
by
a policy
max. As a max.
As a max.
So the amount brought in from TIF revenues net 50% is $1,093,803 for the 18 budget. If you look at the next page, I projected that those dollars out then from 18 to 22. The first column is your projected revenues. We've already the current year's is approximately $1,055,000. We max out next year.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Current debt obligation is shown in the second column there.
Okay.
The proposed debt that you're looking at is shown in the third column.
That's if we pay it over the 10 years.
Correct.
Okay.
That's a 10-year payout. And then the balance per fiscal year is in the fourth column. Okay. Mm-hmm. So what that tells you is that you have, in the neighborhood of $500,000+ or more, $600,000, to pay additional debt with.
Yeah, so we would have the ability to pay this
or
one
pay
off
this one off early
in 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Right.
Right.
Thank you. That's helpful. What did we find out when we ran the numbers? So it seems to me that Maxwell State Bank was the one bidder who had a variable rate. Do we know what that looks like depending on the amount of time we take to pay it off? Just so we're trying to compare apples to apples in terms of how much this is costing us to finance this project.
Oh, I think I ran out. I did not, I'm sorry. I did not do the effective rate for 5 years, I'm sorry.
Got it.
I was going to, and it got...
Well, read me the interest rates over the
interest
first 5 years.
Interest rate on the...
1%.
Okay. So it's 1%, then 1.5%, then 1.8%, and then 2.25%, 2.35%. It goes up 0.10% every year.
So if the highest it gets over 5 years is 2.25% start?
Yes, the highest it gets in 5 years is 2.25%.
Okay. So the effective rate over 5 years would be substantially less than the 2.5%. If we were going to
correct.
Dig in and pay this thing off over 5 years.
Correct.
Questions, board?
No, I think the important part here again was us to look at the lending institutions out there and see how much interest was there and what the overall interest rate would be and the flexibility that we would have on an early buyout because traditionally that has been something that we have done for other bonding projects or other issues of this type, where the resources were available and we could save taxpayer dollars in the long run, we've moved in that direction. So I think that was very important.
And Wayne, let me just say the flip side of that. So my concern with that, I like the idea of paying 1% the first year and going from there. My concern with that is this is not the entirety of the Research Park project. And while future boards are going to have the conversation of how they're going to fund the remaining $2.5 million roughly of this project, it is my intention to continue to push it as a proper utilization of TIF. But that means if we come back next year and we do another $1.5 million bond, you can expect about that $130,000, $140,000 a year to pay that. And I'm concerned. It looks great right now. But if you start looking at if you're really going to utilize TIF for this project in total, it starts to eat into that balance pretty substantially.
Correct.
It's the reason that after analyzing all of this, I come down on the side of State Bank and Trust. At the fixed rate of 2.15 over 10 years. And then we do the same thing we did. What did we just pay off? We saved $80,000 by paying off. Was
secondary road bonding.
Secondary road bonding. If we get into that situation down the road, we can always make a decision to go ahead and pay it off. But I believe that the bid from State Bank and Trust gives us the most flexibility over the 10 years to be able to absorb any future debt that might come along.
I compare this a little bit to some of the things that I loan that I take out and so forth, and where I have a guaranteed fixed rate, I know exactly where it's going to be regardless of what's going to happen in the economy and things of that nature. So there is a certain comfort level in what you're basically proposing at this time.
I guess I would ask, as you were showing an accruing balance that's growing, I mean, and that is what we're talking about, either using or losing. Am I correct in that? I mean, when you were sitting there, if you wish to...
So our policy, Marty, that we put forward really to limit ourselves and future boards was that we would never take more than 50%. Now, to this point, we've utilized almost 50% every year.
Yes.
Right.
If there ever comes a time that the county chooses to move away from utilizing the 50%, then those dollars just roll back into the regular taxation.
Correct.
School systems, townships, the county, junior colleges, anybody else that it impacts. And so you can always make that decision. This is the most that we could take without changing policy. It's not necessarily has to be.
Right.
And I think it's important to acknowledge that this is reviewed and analyzed each year,
right,
and determining whether or not this is going to be the source of revenue that we're going to use or some additional ones. I think it's fair to say that by earlier actions, we have committed up to roughly that $3.1 million for the entire project spread out over several years. So I think that's the important thing for people to keep in mind.
Yeah, and the other side of this, Marty, is what this board in its previous makeup had done over the last 3 or 4 years was we would get into the fall, we would see what our projections for available TIF revenue was going to be, and then we'd utilize whatever remainder we had up to the 50% to do some of those micro projects in our small towns. This board and any future board needs to think about what its philosophy is going to be there and how many dollars, if any, they want to have available to do those kind of things.
So your question about the balance is that balance then would be used for those types of projects, mm-hmm, or debt, decreasing the debt, mm-hmm, or put back in, not used.
So we're talking callable bonds, so
All of them.
Okay. Right.
We give ourselves that flexibility.
Right. Okay.
Additional questions or thoughts from you two? Okay, so we're to the point where the board needs to select a lender. I've stated already what my preference was. That was not a motion. I'm willing to entertain any kind of motion.
I'm going to move that we accept your recommendation on State Bank and Trust at the 2.5 fixed rate over the 10 years as earlier in their projection.
All right, we'll give a qualified approval. I understand the merits of if we were had the luxury of going forward knowing that we could be able to commit to an early buy down, but you know, if you say why the future isn't written yet and we don't know. So I would agree with Lane's motion to take the State Bank bid.
Yeah, in terms of conversation, it is, I believe that if we had some certainty of what a Board of Supervisors philosophy was going to be on TIF over the next 3 or 4 years, that it might make some sense to go with Maxwell State Bank, because it makes sense if you pay it off over 5 years. It stops making sense when you get out to year 7, 8, 9, 10.
Exactly.
We're paying more.
Right.
And so for me, coming down on the side of State Bank is simply the certainty. It is, you know what it looks like. We can pay it off early if we decide to, and then clearly we save that 2.15% for any outlying years that we don't have to continue to pay, but we're not tying the hands of any future board.
That gives me comfort.
No. Any further discussion?
No.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. So we are approving this and awarding the bid to State Bank and Trust in Nevada. Next item along the same lines is consideration of Resolution 1701, setting a date and time for public hearing for July 12, 2016 for approving a loan agreement, awarding the sale, and authorizing the issuance of a $1.5 million urban renewal tax increment revenue bond. And if I need to say more, Mark, I'm going to let you say it.
This item is pretty clear-cut. It's just simply the resolution setting the public hearing for next Tuesday, where all this will be finalized. The only other comment I do want to add is staff does have a draft loan agreement that they'll send over. We'll send over to State Bank, and I expect to add that back in time for the agenda for next Tuesday.
All right.
All right.
Further discussion? No? Okay, so we need a resolution to approve Resolution 1701 setting the date.
So moved.
Second.
The motion is second. Clinton?
Aye.
Chee?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Date is set. Thank you, guys. Next item, and we'll move on up the agenda now, consideration of election security cards for all voting precincts at $29,167.24, and this is an unbudgeted item.
Yeah.
And I think we get to hear something about the Human Services Building in all of this.
Oh, yeah.
As rationale.
I was just
going to
get...
I'll get Kevin. You said...
Hi,
Lucy.
Good morning. Y'all have a good weekend?
Yes. Nice holiday. How about you?
Okay.
Cool weather always
helps.
Kevin.
We might have questions for you.
Well, I'll bring a chair up. How's that sound?
Just a little intro is I had put some numbers together actually to get ready for the FY18 budget session after following the June 7th primary election. The issue is, you know, we got our nice new equipment, which we love, and thank you very much for working with me on that. We use the black box as sort of an off-label use of that, is that we use that as a delivery mechanism also for much of the election equipment that goes out. And it's nice because it's secure, it locks, and it packs just beautifully. Everything fits in there really nicely, which is great when you're in conference room West and it's nice and static and it all fits in there. What we've noticed is that while the lid and the feet are very stable, as there's when you move those around and shift them and haul them out in the trailers, is there's some torque there, and we actually ended up losing an emergency bin door as a result. So I had kind of look at that to look as a budget item for next year originally, because what we don't want to do is trash our black boxes.
Right.
Because replacing those would be $32,250 at the current rate.
Right.
And we would like, total. We would like to keep those in good shape along with our tabulators and our OBIs and get us through, you know, 7 or 8 years of use. And we thought, well, if we keep doing this, we're going to end up replacing the black boxes.
Right.
Along with this, as Kevin and his... Computer Brilliance has also found us $10,000 in savings this year, so I thought, well, I should bring it to the board now this year, and that is in our data charges. I know I sound like an ad, but, you know, we switched carriers, and suddenly we saved a lot of money. So it's true. That actually works. Actually, if you have somebody that's like Kevin that's working out for you. I also think these security cages, if we do continue with the county's plan to do the infill project on the overhang, that would translate a lot better than our current setup too. So we wouldn't lose anything on our routes. We can still pack everything the same number of precincts per trailer, so that we won't change our delivery. And it's actually going to be easier for our poll workers, instead of digging down into a box, they would actually lift it out of a cage. And just knowing that I do have already savings this year to get me at least a third of the way there, I thought I would bring it to you. We can talk about it today. If it doesn't fly, then we'll talk about it again in January.
Yeah, and so secure. Tell me about the difference in security. So the black boxes are lockable, but there are some access points. Clearly, we had a panel fall off.
It's more when they get shifted, when they're weighted down. There's a couple of hundred pounds of election equipment in there. They're so deep, and so the plastic boxes, and they just they twist a little bit, and that.
Yeah. And that is.
And so, how secure are these cards that we're talking about?
Well, they're steel, so they're not going to twist and bend.
Steel carts with padlocking doors, so they're.
Yeah.
So more. I mean,
we have lots of black boxes too, so we can.
And so, anecdotally, and maybe I'll misstate this, but for the primary election, we had this black box that was going out. A panel fell off, but we didn't know it had fallen off. So we delivered the equipment the day before. Mm-hmm. Came in the next morning, and we noticed that one of our black boxes at one of our locations was open and had at least initial concerns maybe somebody had been in there that shouldn't have been in there.
Right. We thought it was a vandalism issue. There was no seals had been broken, nothing had been tampered with, but yeah, the panel was missing. So
you immediately pulled that equipment and brought it back here and replaced it with new equipment, but it just made sense to me that if we're going to deliver the night before, which makes a lot of sense to me, we need to make sure that this equipment is as secure as it can possibly be. So I like the idea, not only of not damaging the black boxes, but having something that's a little more secure.
Right. And we won't take up any more space because we can now stack the black boxes. So, but I thought if we ever go to any different storage setup in this building, that's much more flexible, and we won't have to do any sort of new shelf configuration.
So it's a $29,167.24 item. You say you believe you found $10,000 in savings on your FY17 budget.
Correct.
So we need to find an additional $19,000. Lisa, how did we look everywhere?
24. We came in really well. I haven't done the percentages, but we were well above the budgeted.
If we decided this was something that was worth doing before our general election in November, we have the access to some dollars to be able to do that. Other questions? I know for me, I'd like to have it done before the general election.
That's
this year.
Right here, right?
And it makes perfect sense to me. It's nice that fiscally we're in a position where we do have some flexibility to go out and spend $19,000 on something that I think is completely warranted and to the benefit of the people of Story County. You guys, thoughts or questions?
With approval today, what's the timeline of getting these cards? Do you know that?
They are they're available in the warehouse in Michigan now, so we could have them in a week or two.
Uncle Mitch, I don't believe. I was thinking, maybe if it needs to be
the panel truck, maybe.
Takes more than a pickup to go get them.
That was a joke.
Yeah, we wouldn't have brought you if we couldn't get them because we would need to get them all set up and ready to go, by mid-August, I would say. So.
And our current storage, I think it's great if we can move ahead and do the infill project on this building that we're talking about.
Right.
But our current storage can accommodate these additional pieces of equipment.
Right.
And our trailers accommodate them the same delivery routes that we use now.
Okay. So with the infill down here and the projections, that these would just be transposed down to there at some point in the future?
That's been a long-term CIP project.
Yeah, I want to say it's in 20 or 21. Leanne's not in here right now, but
21.
It's in for 21, so if we move ahead, as we hope we're going to move ahead, that'd be a 21 deal, and then that would free up some additional office and meeting space up here. I think getting those carts in and out. I know this primary, you had a back elevator go out, right? So we had to bring everything up and down.
Working on the COOPCOG, the continuity operations plan, like this would let us, I think it's more secure to move things around and have them distributed across different locations if we had to do that.
Right.
Yeah, so.
Okay.
Any more questions?
So my question would be, if we move forward with this, are you suggesting that we would approve the total amount of the $29,167.24, knowing full well that you that we're probably really looking at the $19,000?
It's a different budget line, of course, in telecommunications. But yeah, netting it out, it would be $19,000.
Right, and so what will happen is we won't amend anything in right away, right. But when we come back and do our amendments later in FY17, we would be committing, but this board would be committing to keeping you whole, okay. And we appreciate any savings you can go find to make that work.
Okay. Yeah, I'm working on a current budget amendment right now for FY17 that I want to get done before the end of July or by the first of April or August. But this would, my understanding is we would not include this because we can make it. We're okay until later in the year.
Right.
See where we came out in the general election overall.
Okay. So if we're there, I take a motion.
I would move to approve the purchase of the election security cards for $29,167.24 for the auditor's office.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Further discussion. Chief.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Pass. Thanks, Lucy.
All right.
Kevin, good job.
One question, Lucy. Is this something that would be worthwhile next Tuesday? I meet with the seat board. This would be our next meeting. And a lot of times, other auditors and so forth, they'll be talking about election equipment and so forth. Would it be something that you think would be worth just talking about? You know, what we discovered here with this particular...
No, so I think we were the only county that's using the black box.
Actually, I need to know.
But a lot of counties actually use security cards.
Right, okay, so I didn't want to bring it up. It's, yeah, if we're the only one. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, next item is discussion consideration of file plan for PCC pavement, grade and new, on Grant Avenue from 190th North all the way to the city limits of Gilbert. There was a rumor, so I got stopped in Gilbert the other day, and there was a rumor that we had scrapped all this, the board had given up on paving any of that, and tell us where we are, Derek.
I haven't heard that rumor yet, but
yep.
Let me get my presentation up. Just a reminder, we held some meetings earlier in the year on this project to get some public input, especially on the bike path portion. And as part of those meetings, I commented I'd be back to get the final approval of the plans before we move forward, purchasing any right-of-way, and that's what I'm doing today. Okay, here's the project. From what we call Moose Road, West 190th, up to the Gilbert city limits. This is turned sideways, so this is 190th.
Yeah, so north is to the right.
Correct.
Yeah.
And this is Moose Road or West 190th. We had a, let me skip to the very end here, the aerial photo showing some of our challenges. To get that bike path in on the east side of the road here, we have to get through a couple of residences, but then we're pretty clear the rest of the way.
And our rationale on not going to the west side of the road?
The main thing is we have a 10-inch drainage district tile that runs the entire mile in this ditch over here, and we don't want to put that bike path anywhere close to that, as deep as it is. And we have some other issues with... We've tried to get a bike path through this property for years along the railroad or up here, and the property owners at that time just weren't willing to work with us on that, and you can't use eminent domain for bike paths right away. So we need voluntary cooperation with the bike path through here. Since that meeting, we had comments from these two property owners and the farm ground owner here. We've met with both of these in the field to look at what would... the impact on their front yard would be, and so far they both sound agreeable with what we proposed. Most of it is off system on the back of the right of way for the bike path. The dark area is the bike path. When we get in front of these yards, we've condensed it down. We're actually paving the shoulder of the roadway right here and then squeezing the bike path in.
So the width of it doesn't change at all. It still remains.
Bike path stays the same.
Okay.
Are you talking about a rumble strip on the shoulder between the driving lanes and?
There wouldn't be a rumble strip, but there'd be the 5-foot paved shoulder and then a 2-foot granite. So there's a 7-foot separation between the driving lanes and the bike path, and that's plenty. So we have that separation, which I'm comfortable with. Was a bit of a challenge getting across. City of Ames is grading their bike path right now on this side, on the south side. We need to get across the road. In order to do that, we got to swing around
We can't stop them on the radius because that's where trucks and cars turn. So we got to swing the bike path around here and then take them across and then over. We got to get that in front of the stop bar because you don't want bikes crossing in between cars. That's not a good situation.
Okay, separate issue, but do you see any speed limit change requests, particularly during that stretch in this particular area, or for that matter, even extending a little bit further because of the access to the school and so forth?
I'm considering it on this last stretch. The next landowner to the north that I'll get to next, they are requesting speed limit. They mainly want it because of the gravel road conditions, but
right.
Now with the paving, they like see it as well. So I'm considering maybe a 45 through this stretch since the bike path gets a little closer, and it's a stop condition right here anyway, so they're slowing down anyway. We can slow them down a little bit sooner, but the rest of the north I wasn't considering because that's going to be so wide open. People are going to want to go 55 on that.
Initial thoughts on turning 190th at Grant Gretton 530th into a four-way stop?
Yeah, my initial thoughts were to leave it west 190th through without a stop, see how it works. It could turn into a four-way stop by the time we're done. We're going to have signage for the bike path warning. There's a crossing, but at this point I wasn't planning on stops, but I'm not 100% opposed to that either.
Well, you are aware, though, with the development that are currently going in just to the east of there, southeast of there, and possibly turning lanes there, and depending upon what happens with the country club and things of that nature, and where the maintenance shop might be changed, but the overriding issue of, I noticed that the church, Christ Community, is heavily used, 190th going that particular area. So potentially there could be a lot more increased traffic there. So I would ask us to maintain some level of flexibility that if we determine that the increased traffic and other issues that might come into play, considering putting a stop sign there for that reason, and primarily we're talking the difference between heavy use of bicycles versus just the main flow of automobiles. And if we find that that's really heavily traveled, strictly from a safety standpoint, I at least want to come back and revisit that.
Yeah. Have we explored it all there? So there's this movement. I know Ames has gone heavily to the solar-powered flashing crosswalks. I know there's one over near where I live now on Highland where you push the button and it doesn't give us, it's not a stoplight or a stop sign or anything, but it gives a flashing notification that there's somebody in the crosswalk. I know that what Ames seems to be going to is all solar powered. Have we looked at any of that?
So we don't have any crossings in the county, so we've looked at it for some stop signs and stuff, but the problem you get in the rural areas with solar panels, they're a target for shooting more in the rural areas than in the urban areas, so, and they're fairly expensive, but we are considering those in some areas. But
well, I'd like us to strongly consider making that a four-way stop. I'd like us, and maybe this happens after we pave the road, but to do some heavy traffic counts, what's coming from every direction, because I think this is just going to grow. And at a minimum, if we decide that a four-way stop is not practicable there, then we need to make sure that we're giving full notification that that is a crossing. I know I'm out there enough that 190th is one of our speedways in Story County. I mean, people like to motor pretty good up and down through there. And I just think we need to be really, really aware of it as we go.
Okay. And we can make that decision by the time we open this road up. We're going to stop at that point. But
And I'm assuming there's a standard distance notification when you're approaching a bike lane and so forth. Is that something that might even want to be extended, warning pedestrians further up the road that there is a possibility of bikes utilizing?
There's a bike lane ahead sign, which is pretty far back, right. And then there's an actual bike lane sign right at the crossing, okay. So that should be adequate.
Okay.
You get too much further, people right just ignore it anyway.
Right. And there's good sight lines out here. I mean, that's all the nice parts. Not as good as sight lines where 180th crosses,
no.
But good sight lines right here on 190th.
And I'll show you a picture of 180th, what that'll look like. So this is the first property owner, and he seemed agreeable to it. And that's a little close up of the intersection with 190th and how there'll be a painted crossway for this. And then there'll be that buffer in between the traveled way and that crossing, trying to get as much buffer as we can there, keeping in front of the stop bar. And then this is the second house up there across from the farmstead. You can't see the house, but the house is back here. We did run into some issues when we met with them that we didn't see when we surveyed the property. Right about in here, the well to the house sits right next to the property line, the right-of-way line. So we did come up with a solution with that with the property owner. It's just a little hard to see being dark. This is the main traveled way. This is that paved shoulder I was talking about. Then there's a 2-foot granular, so that's a 7-foot buffer, and this is the bike lane here. This is the well. We can't cut that back like you normally would for the slope, so we're going to put a small retaining wall that would only be 3 foot high, and that would still leave enough cover on the well so it doesn't freeze. And cost-wise, it's not that expensive, but it won't be that long, and it's only 3 foot high, so we come up with a pretty good solution here. You squeeze through
and
there.
The property owner seems satisfied with that initially. And this is somewhere you had to put a wall in like this, not because of a well, but when you did South Dakota,
you had to put a large one.
Yeah.
Yep, and that worked out well. So we're able to squeeze through there. And this is what it looks like when it gets away from the houses. Then we have the full ditch section and the bike path completely separated.
I like that.
And that's the existing right-of-way line. So this is all new right-of-way purchase. This is the 180th crossing. This north is on the right side. So the bike path is separated at this point, so it's quite a ways away from the intersection. So we're going to go ahead and pave this intersection out past it. Otherwise, it'll be completely covered with rock every time you go over it.
Right.
And this is already a stop condition for the gravel road. So this will be a through. And again, that's the aerial photo showing the entire route. And I think get approval from the board to start purchasing right away. We'll meet with this property owner right here first because he had a concern with the bike path. And if we can't get voluntary acceptance from him, we'll have to look at some other options. But I'd like to get approval from the board with this route and try to start moving forward with the right away and see how far we can get.
Questions for Darren?
I think that you'll probably tell me it's because of traffic patterns, traffic volumes, and area growth, but can you tell me what brought to our attention to pave this portion of the county?
Yeah, it's the school traffic, to be honest with you. Inexperienced drivers on gravel roads. We had another one just a month or so ago. Car rolled a couple times and ended up on its top in the middle of the gravel road. It's one of the safest gravel roads we have out there. It's level, flat, wide open, ditches aren't deep, but still they're finding ways to get in pretty bad accidents. I don't know how they're doing it, but that's how in the school, you know, the Brandon Gilbert School just went in to the north of there, and that really started increasing the school traffic.
Yeah, so it was a little frustrating, and Wayne, I won't speak for you. I remember that Toot and I were absolutely frustrated that it felt like the first that the Board of Supervisors was included on this issue was about the time they opened the new high school in Gilbert. And, oh, by the way, we built this high school at the north end of a gravel road where many of our students coming out of Ames, because of the way the Gilbert school system works, a lot of those students, I think they're saying now more than 50% of their students are coming out of Ames. It's the most direct route to this school. And so this is one of those projects that we can't use any federal funding. It's 100% local funding.
Right.
Without the passage of the fuel tax increase, this would not have been a possibility for the county. We just determined as a board that even though we may not like the way it came to us, doing the right thing is doing the right thing. and we were able to identify some dollars to be able to do this. I will say the school system in the city have given us an initial commitment to pay for half of the cost of the bike lane. So the county is going to absorb all of the road and 50% of the bike lane, and the city of Gilbert and the school system are going to work jointly to figure out how to pay for half of the bike lane all the way from 190th to the Gilbert city limits.
Well, it's good to have partners with pockets.
And right, I don't know if you're aware, just the south of that, Ames just finished paving that last fall. The mile that was gravel up until last year, so we knew once they paved that, it was even increased.
We're just connecting pavement to pavement.
Yeah.
Okay, I know the county's done that in other places here, but I didn't know the backstory in regards to, yes, I know where the high school's at, and I know what the road were involved. I just didn't know what would take a piece of gravel road to bring it onto our, you know.
Well, it's even one step beyond that. This is the only place in the county, and I believe, you correct me if I'm wrong here, but it's the only place in the county where we're paying to pave a county road where we've got pavement 1 mile on both sides of it.
That's correct.
Okay. You got 69 1 mile to the east, and you got George Washington Carver 1 mile to the west. And so this is outside what I believe the county has ever done.
All right. Well, thank you, Darren. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if there's no other questions, I would sure entertain any kind of motion on this.
So the motion basically, just so I'm correct, is just to approve the plans for the pavement at this time.
Correct, and that authorized me to start purchasing right away.
Okay, so move.
Second.
Your motion, second. Further discussion. Clinton?
Aye.
Chee?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. You guys both need to sign this before you get away today.
Okay.
Right. Darren, thanks.
Thank you.
Next item, we get to continue. We get to talk about establishing speed limits on portions of 190th and 510th.
This is kind of back what I was talking about earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is further. This is further west.
Oh, further west.
Yeah. This is just west of the country club and Craven Winery.
Right. Gotcha. Yeah.
We had a request from a property owner in the area. It's actually right here. It's that property owner that requested a lower speed limit. But as you recall, this came up a few years back when this is the new brewery out at the Prairie Moon Winery. They had an existing driveway
right
here, and it doesn't have good sight distance, and they went ahead and paved it and everything without asking the county. It created a sight distance issue, and at that time there was no speed limit on the road, and so we reduced it to 45 at that time all the way out to G.W. Carver. We're currently designing this bridge at the bottom of the hill right here, and all we're able to get is about a 25 mile an hour design on that curve, that vertical curve there. So at that point, I was looking at lowering the speed limit through here anyway, and we're having a difficult time keeping the vegetation. There's a hill right here, so when you pull out of this driveway, it's difficult to see over this hill for cars coming from that direction.
So we're talking south right now. That's, well, okay.
So it's Wayne George Orson Carver is off the right side of the screen.
Let me go to the next.
And if you're going back to Prairie Moon, you're headed west as you go to the left.
Right. Okay, so the bridge we're talking about is right as you go down the first hill.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
Over here. Well, and that bridge is the small string, right?
This is
the one that we're in design. We haven't done anything. We haven't done anything there yet. And this is where every time Darren sits here and we talk about 190th, I say, I don't believe there's ever going to come a time that the county is going to be able to afford to replace the bridge across Squaw Creek for 190th Street. Now, what's important to remember is we've got Cameron Estates that have just started built. Well, just they got people living there now, but they're going to do, I think, 47 homes ultimately out there, and that's at the far west end of 190th, where it attaches to 505th. And so what I keep saying every time we talk about this is we're going to have to close this road down when we put in the new bridge that Darren is designing right now across the small little tributary. And I have proposed on multiple occasions that we never, ever, ever reopen 190th all the way through again. We make it a dead end on one side of Squaw Creek. So to get to those homes that are just east of Squaw Creek, once Darren puts in the new small bridge, you have to come from George Washington Carver to get there. and there would be no way through on 190th on the west side. Would just be a gravel dead-end road that comes down to Squaw Creek. We make what's existing there a pedestrian bridge, and we eliminate all access back and forth. What we've got is we've got Cameron School Road to the south. It's our major artery running east-west, all the way over to County Line Road and all the way over to George Ocean Carver. And the cost for us to put a bridge in, ultimately, across Squaw Creek is going to be in the millions easy. We're going to have to raise up the road. It's going to be a really, really long bridge. There's not enough traffic on 190th that stretch today to warrant it. And my fear is that it's going to grow as we get some development in out here. And I just soon send those people to Cameron School Road from day one and not have the issues.
Every time Squaw Creek gets out of its banks, we got about a quarter of a mile here that the water goes over the road and washes the road out every time.
Didn't we have a car drain that had just an early last spring?
And it was back quite a ways. It washed back quite a ways. It was amazing how that all happened. Yeah. Question, Darren, as we're talking about the bridge and so forth, I ran into a gentleman over the weekend. He was telling me in Missouri they are experimenting with these large tankers and so forth. Somehow the way they're constructed, and they're using them for culverts type things rather than having to replace smaller bridges and stuff. I was not aware of this. I told him to send me that information so that I could forward that on to you. But have you heard much about some of the other states that are using some type of, and I'm not sure what type of tank was, but it's...
Yeah, there's two. There's type, the tankers, you can use the pipe, or the flat cars, you can actually use the bridge. There's one county in Iowa, Buchanan, that does a lot of that. Most counties shy out for liability reasons. It gets a little, you don't have a specific design for it, and it gets a little, dicey with liability. But it can be done.
We're having good luck with the prefab concrete.
But I just thought it would be worth, receiving the information and sharing it on. I don't know, and be interested to see, how many communities and facilities in Missouri is using it. Maybe they're top out. Topography and everything is quite different from ours, but just a bit of information to pass on.
Perfect. All right, so back to the topic at hand. We did a little history for Marty and a little talk about what might come. Let's talk about speed limits. Darren, what are you proposing on 190th for speed limits?
So currently it's 45 from, this is 510th Avenue, that steel coat curved around here. It's 45 from here to here currently. I'm going to leave that 45 up to where you get just short of the sight distance hill here. Go 35 from here on about up to here before you start hitting that hill down to the bridge. So go 25 and take that around the curve up to here. So we'll have 45, 35, and then 25 around the curve.
So my question would be, why is it 45 from George Ocean Carver coming? I mean, so that's a stop. That's either a stop or a turn condition, right? If you're coming on 190, if you have to stop before you cross George Ocean Carver, if you're turning off George Ocean Carver, clearly you're not turning at 45 miles an hour. Is it reasonable for people to speed up in that quarter mile to 45, or do we just go 35 all that whole stretch until you drop it to 25?
We could. You drive that at 35, it's so wide open, it just feels like you're crawling. I don't think people would like that.
Okay.
45 just totally safe when you're driving it.
Okay.
Until you get up to the hills, then we have the sight distance.
And that's about it, that driveway on the south is where you're proposing that it drops to 35?
Yep, it's right about that driveway. I'd comment, most time, I get a lot of speed requests, and a lot of them aren't really warranted because most of our pavements are designed for 55 miles an hour. This was a gravel road that got steel coated at one point without bringing it up to a paving standard. Try to avoid that where we can't go. We run into these situations when you don't do that. But that's why I'm considering this. It's more of a geometrics of the road, warrant a lower speed. Otherwise, they don't normally take these requests on pavements.
Well, I could see a potential revenue generating source there if we decided to really tackle the people that are going to ignore the speed limit. I understand that that's going to always be somewhat of a challenge, and that's why I believe the decision that we will be discussing at a later date on actually closing that lower portion there makes a lot of sense because I've driven out that way quite a number of times. And like you say, the tendency is, you know, you're going to drive the 45 very easily. And it's only until you almost come to where the turn is in the road after you get past the winery and all, before you go down the hill that you're even conscious of trying to slow down.
I think it makes lots of sense to me. I know we were really concerned about the driveway right there at the Pluvial. We're fortunate that, to my knowledge, we haven't had any major accidents coming out of there.
No, and the idea was we got to keep the vegetation right low in the ditch, and we're struggling doing that. It's growing so fast, so the 35 would be much better.
Cool. Questions, comments?
What's the speed limit on 510, especially when you turn north?
There is none now, so it'd be
55
at night, or during the day, and 50 at night is the code.
Did the county pay to seal coat this road?
Yes.
So the speed limit before it was seal coated was 45. What is gravel? I guess I would ask you.
Gravel's the same. It's 55 during the day and 50 at night.
Okay. So has are we got on a traffic basis at a threshold where that would be something that the county be? I know how you take the gravel road to seal coating. You did it for a reason. Have you got to the point, as you see progress going forward, even when you dead end it, to be, I mean, and I just, I'm dovetailing this into my last question, is the fact you paved a road, you know, you were moving to pave a road going into Gilbert, is this a road that you would, the county would entertain at some distant point in the future of paving itself?
Yes, we do have plans to actually overlay this whole steel coat to make it more of an asphalt road. We weren't going to bring it up to a paving design at that time, so the speed limit needs to be in place anyway. When we do this culvert, we couldn't get a design speed above 25, otherwise we'd really be raising the road and damaging the, you know, the environmental character of that stretch. So when we do a new project like that, you have to post the speed according to your new design. So we were going to have to post this at 25 anyway.
Okay.
I'm just getting a little ahead of it here with this request. Mm-hmm. But just, I also want to comment, this gravel road was seal coated. It wasn't just the seal coat. It was actually an experimental project where we went down a foot and did this foamed asphalt and made a good base, and then it was seal coated on top of that. We're having troubles maintaining that seal coat, so that's why after we get this bridge in, we let things settle. The year after, we have a plan to overlay that whole road with a capacity of asphalt.
I appreciate the time, man.
Okay. Other questions? If not, I would entertain a motion on Resolution 1703.
I would move to adopt Resolution 17.03 establishing speed limits on this portion of 190th and 25 and 10.
Second.
Motion is second. Any further discussion? Key.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Resolution 1703 passes. No agency reports today. Departmental reports. Hey, what a coincidence.
He's here quarterly report.
Thank you. Thank you. I had these few first slides in my last presentation, but we didn't have time to show them to you, so I wanted to back up a little bit. This is way back in February. This kind of goes hand in hand with my first topic there. The December flooding caused a lot of erosion issues for us. There was something about a flood in December. We haven't had one of those since I can remember. Did a lot of damage erosion-wise. This was Riverside Bridge. Skunk River Bridge, one of our most important bridges in the county. As you can see, it was February 8th, 2016. We discovered this problem with the back slope. It's a little difficult to see there, but I have some other pictures. This is what caused it, the debris that hung up on the pier. It caused water to come around at a high velocity and scour under this concrete matting we had, and it created a big scour hole underneath that, and it collapsed. These were up on top of the cap, and then this matting was all the way up to the top to protect the backslope there. It's hard to see, but you can actually see the steel piling underneath that holds up the bridge, and you're not supposed to ever see that. So we discovered this February 8th. It was real close to having to close this bridge. The next day was a complete whiteout blizzard. And so I didn't know how we were going to close this road and put up signage in a whiteout blizzard. People couldn't even see the signs on the road. We met with our bridge consultant out there for a second opinion. We both came to the same conclusion. We could leave this open as long as the water levels didn't rise up in it, because once it saturated this ground, we were uncomfortable leaving that open. So we scrambled as fast as we could to put together some equipment and materials to get this thing fixed with our own crews as fast as possible. It was below zero at the time, too, so to move dirt around is very difficult when it's frozen. We were able to manage to get a haul road built quickly to get materials down in here. See our loader bringing riprap down.
That's coming off conservation ground right there. That's an access point.
Both access right there, thankfully. Otherwise, I don't know if we'd be able to get this done. And we also had a stockpile of clay out at by Peterson Pit from the bridge we did out there a number of years back. It was above ground, so I thought it would be frozen. But thankfully, we dug into the ways, and it was thawed out enough we could actually haul it to the site. So we had a borrow pit available, too. We did have to rent some special backhoes because we had to deal with the clearance issue. It's very difficult to put dirt and riprap when you can't get up very high. So we had to squeeze under there with special backhoes. Our skid loader, we had to rent a compactor on there to run up and down to compact the dirt that we hauled in and then kind of bench it up and squeeze underneath those beams. We didn't want to hit those beams. Put the fabric down and then finished product. We got it done in a matter of a few days, so I'm very proud of our crews how they did this. And we also have a, like I said, it was a very deep scour hole we filled with riprap, so now we kind of have a path we can get to when we get future blockages. We can get out there and clear them a little easier than we had in the past. And then the last slide, I just want to show you, we also discovered a month or two after the other abutment. It's hard to see here, but it's just fabric. The stone had actually gotten washed off that one, too, so we had to get, that was much easier to fix because the dirt wasn't gone. We had to fix that side, too.
Before you move on there, I want to
speak to that. So that to me is a demonstration, Darren, of how you and your staff do a phenomenal job for Story County. This is something that was unforeseeable, that it would hit us like it hit us. This is, I think, inarguably one of the most important bridges in our system in Story County. You think about if you're trying to get across the Skunk River on a paved road, where you would have to go north and south to be able to circumvent that. This is a big, big deal. I think you guys were creative. I think you handled it with immediacy. And I've been happy as I've gone by and stopped and taken a look. It seems to be holding up really, really well. And I just think you guys did a great job.
Thanks. I'll look forward to closing that. In the next week, they're predicting 40 to 50 degree temperatures, so the water was going to come up. So we scrambled to get it done, but we got her done.
I know Paul spent a lot of time on that. I remember, so Paul was our chair at that point, and I know you and he spent a lot of time trying to figure out exactly what was going to happen and how it was going to happen. And I know he was really, really pleased with the result.
Some more of the damage from the flooding. This is the, if you know Jerry Ryerson's gravel road, you can see the interstate in the background, the trucks driving in the background. The DOT is doing their work over on 260th right in the background. This, the culvert we put in, it experienced floods in the past, but this was a December flood again. There was no crops in the field to protect the field, and we hadn't seen this happen much, but this is a pretty deep, that's 5 or 6 foot deep right on the side. It gets even deeper in the middle. We also had a waterline breakage under there, so we don't know what happened first, if that waterline broke and caused a weak spot in the ground already, but fortunately, this property owner had put this in the CRP program, so he's not concerned about planting it, but we're not real sure what we're going to do with this hole yet. It's all on private property, whether we're going to assist with any, we're going to see if DOT has any extra waste material to fill some of that up with, but these are just some of the things we saw out there that come with a December flood. A number of these, this year in particular with that December flood, you see a little hole in the road that occurs, but when you look in that hole, it's huge. The water had gone under the back wall and scoured out all the material behind it. So we have to dig these up and go way down and put riprap and fortify them behind the back wall. I don't want pictures of all of those, but we had 3 or 4 of those. This is another one. This is the road out to the Ames Water Treatment Plant, 280th. That's Skunk River in the background. We have 2 overflow bridges that only get used when the Skunk gets out of its banks, and this is one of them. see the little hole here, but below that is a huge hole. Got underneath the wood back wall. When this bridge was originally put in, there's only probably 2 foot of clearance to go underneath that for the water. But over time, when the floods went, it scours it out. We pump the water out, and you can see how much deeper it is now. And over time, these boards were put in to lower this further and further, because the more scour you get, that's where the dirt comes out underneath the back wall. It was never planned to be that deep. And this bridge, this is the one we had the issues with. We excavated that out behind it to fix it, and the whole bridge shifted. You can see it's leaning right there. The cap split right here, and that's a real problem for us. You can see the back wall even split. We eventually found out what was going on. You can see these are all bent. This is a wood bridge that lasted us 80 years. That's way longer than it was supposed to, but it never got any water, so it didn't deteriorate as fast as much our other wood bridges do, because the water is what caused the deterioration in the piling. But these piling were only 18 feet long, so that left only 8 to 10 foot in the ground, and they were just completely unstable. So when we unexcavated the back, the bridge was just unstable and shifted and just pretty much destroyed the bridge. But so we got 80 years out of it, which was pretty good. Piling in the ground now, 40 foot's a minimum, so 18 foot wasn't anywhere adequate way back then, but they used what they had back 80 years ago. A picture of the top of the piling is completely rotted out. But our quick solution to get this back open, especially for the city of Ames traffic, we just filled in the void and put some pipes in there now.
Is there anybody using this road other than the city of Ames getting out to the treatment plant?
There is a couple farms on the west side of the Skunk River that use it to haul their grain in and out. The city of Ames does have a back way in. They built a private road.
Right.
So they do have another access, but we still got to get access to the properties, the farm ground back there. The only thing left on this is it's in the floodplain, so we're working, Leanne's working with the DNR to discuss what the final solution, if they're okay with this, or fortunately it's not in a detailed study area, otherwise we would have had to redo that for sure, but it's not detailed study. The only time it gets used is when it's overflow, and whenever it gets out of the banks, it always goes over the road anyway. So whether we're going to be able to leave it like this or not, I don't know. If we have to add some more pipes to satisfy them, we do that. It'd be cheaper than a $100,000 box cover we could throw in here if we had to, but we're working with the DNR on that.
Yeah.
This is another wood bridge issue we had. Our mortar grader actually fell through. Most of our designs aren't like this. Our deck was just a bunch of boards spanned across. Usually we have decking going both ways. It creates more redundancy in the design. So if we get one or two rotted boards that have a knot in it or something, he hit it just perfectly to collapse that. So we were able to fix that, but hopefully we don't have too many more issues like that with our wood bridges, but they are getting older. Move on to mowing. I've reported for a few years now that I think it was 5 years ago the legislature passed a new law that said you can't mow until July 15th. We're really struggling with that law. You can mow for safety reasons. I think we've decided we're just going to start earlier now as a general practice and mow our shoulders for safety reasons. This picture was still in May, and the grass is over the mailbox, you can see there. It creates a lot of intersection safety problems, especially, so we need to just start mowing earlier. That's our plan.
Now, we have to document those for in case there's ever a question come down.
We don't. I think the intention of the law was there's a few counties out there that mow from fence line to fence line. We don't do that. And the law was to protect the nesting birds. We just mowed the shoulder area, and that's it. Safety area for the intersection especially, so I think we're getting the safety issue, but no, we don't document it, and nobody knows who even enforces the law anyway, so there's nothing to really document, but other than, it's a safety issue for our shoulders, so we got to get those mowed. No, we did start to mow
two of our three trackers broke down, and so then we really got behind. So we just need to get a quicker start on this earlier in the year. We do have them back in operation now, but we're starting on the gravels, but we've got all the pavements mowed at this point.
Let me go back to my original question on the safety issue in the mowing.
Yeah.
Do you foresee that we would ever want to work with the landowners and the farmers in that particular area and see if they would create a slightly buffer right near the junction of that area? I assume this is just not farm territory. This is just stuff growing up in the right-of-way and things like that, the roadside growth. Is that correct?
Yeah, this is just roadside growth. So we have plenty of right-of-way. It's just overgrown.
Okay. That answers my question then.
If it was a farm, it probably would have been sprayed down anyway, so that probably...
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Salt update. Reason I'm bringing salt up this time of year is we did actually go out for this. The DOT bid this time. We usually don't do that. We negotiate individually. We wanted to see if there were other suppliers out there that didn't have the bottleneck issue we have in Ames with the railroad. We did get the same supplier. I think it was going to work fine. We did have two bidders, but the other one would have trucked it in, but they were a little higher cost-wise. And it comes in at $70.74 a ton. It's pretty close to what it was last year. But what we're going to do this year is we have two cells, each hold 600 tons. This one's usually a 50-50 mix. We straight salt on this side. We're going to run this straight salt, so we'll be able to put 1,200 tons of salt in the shed at once. And we have a small bin that used to be used for salt sand. We're going to use that as our mixed bin until we get this cleared out through the winter, and then we'll start using it for mix again. But we average 1,000 to 1,200 tons of salt a year, so we want to get to a whole year if we can without having it. What we had this year, Marty, was in the middle of winter when everybody wants salt at the same time, there's only one spot in Ames where it comes off the railroad, and it kind of becomes a bottleneck, especially when everybody wants it at the same time. We nearly ran out this past winter because of that bottleneck, so... We're looking to get a little more storage so we don't run into those issues.
Well, we just feel like we need to store what we expect to use for the year so that we're not running around partway through the year trying to look for more salt. Now, part of the plan with the new outbuilding that we're talking about building at the Kelly Corner will be some additional salt and sand storage, right?
Where is this building, Darren? This is right in town here, our Nevada main shed here.
So does this create logistical problems for you getting the mix? You say you got one building. For the start of the winter, as you're starting to pull out of that one bay, you got problems with the mix?
No, like I said, we got a little mixing bin we'll use. We're going to have to buy a tarp to get it covered, but other than that, we can use that as our mixing until we get this first bin cleared out. This aren't necessarily flood-related issues because these are just pipes that have rusted over time, but they show up when we get the flooding especially. So we had two somewhat emergency repairs on pipes that weren't budgeted. This is on S-27 just north of Maxwell. It's difficult to see, but the bottom of this pipe is completely rusted out, and it's bent up in the middle of the pipe bent up, and there's a gentleman in there trying to push that down. But what we did there, instead... It's a difficult road for us to detour right out of Maxwell. So we wanted to avoid the detour. We wanted to avoid tearing up the pavement because that gets really costly when you do a large pavement patch. So we're coming in with a liner inside instead of completely replacing it. That's the pipe that came out. The bottom was completely gone. It was rusted out. Normally we leave it all in, but that pipe was so bad, we removed one stretch of pipe. The rest stayed in, and we just slid the liner through it. And these pipes on the outside are for air. When they pump the slurry mix in, it gets the air out, so it gets completely slurried around the pipe. But we're able to do that at about the same cost it would have taken to do the whole pavement patching without traffic disruptions. That's the outlet portion showing the pipe sticking out. The other benefit to this plastic liner was we've had some issues, we believe, with what type of water was going through that pipe and rusted it out. There's sewage improvements up north of that. When they overflow, we get that. So
this plastic liner won't rust out in the future either, so that's another benefit to the liner.
And it doesn't reduce capacity that much?
No, it was pretty minimal. It was just a couple inches for a 60-inch pipe, isn't that much. The next one is it would have been more of a capacity issue. This is a E57, and it is a tile. Tiles are harder to line because the capacity issues, tiles are always too small.
Right.
And Steve, this is next to Steve Colton Elzer's farm, and he's always proposing more tile coming into this anyway. And actually, you can see Steve there, he's inspecting this job for us.
It's nice out there inspecting for us.
But what happened is this was a metal culvert like that last one, and it completely rusted out. You can see that in the background here, it's holes in it. And it wasn't straight either. It bent up, so we couldn't do a liner because it was bent anyway. But while we're in here, this is the 12 to 18 inch tiles coming in. We just bumped it up to a 30 because we know Steve's planning on, it's actually a drainage district tile. So we would be responsible for putting a new crossing in if that district decided to put a bigger tile. So we just put a bigger one in right now and got it replaced. And our crews were able to do this and get the road patched in 2 days, so they did a really good job on that. Wanted to comment, this is a patch on 510th Avenue, that's the Polk County line just south of it. It's considered R38 extension, but it's technically not R38. R38 actually goes over into Sheldahl. But this is right before you get into Polk County. This road did this, I don't know, was it 8 years ago or so? The entire road kind of blew up. We have the sewage lagoons right next to it, and the water level is actually higher than the road, so it has a lot of water issues, so when it goes fast. It's hard to tell, but this middle is actually pushed up at least 6 inches. We got that all scraped off, and we put some hot mix patch over the top for the time being, but it won't last long as soft as the subgrade is, so we're going to have to get mats in there to patch that yet this year when they're in to do our other asphalt work. The other one was up on E18. Rick, I know you know,
yep,
when you had your zeroing meeting, they commented on the roughness of the patch. We had a pipe that got replaced and it settled. That has been fixed, and Manette's put a new patch on that for us, so that is fixed.
Good.
Mm-hmm. Moving on to construction, 2016 projects for this calendar year. We had 12 projects. Ignore this one. That's one that could have potentially, that's the West 190th one where we just did the speed limit on. That could have started this fall, but we're going to wait to do that next season. But the rest are on there. The first two that have already been completed are these two. These are actually just deck overlay projects. I'll show you a couple pictures of deck overlays. Some of our bigger decks, you can see they get deteriorated on the top. It's difficult to see, but what he does is he has a chain, he drags on it. You can tell by the sound how rotten the concrete is, and then we mark it out. This was the first bridge we did on S-27 south of Maxwell. Doesn't look too bad. It had some patching in the past. You can patch it the first couple times, and then it gets to the point of a deck overlay. But when you see asphalt over the top of a deck, that's a bad sign because it causes the deck to rot out. You don't want to do that. But so we knew we were getting into the borderline on this one, and it turned out to be real bad. When they start jackhammering it, they went completely through the deck in this area, so it was wide open. Huh. We almost had to put a new deck on this. Fortunately, wasn't quite to that level, so we were a little nervous, but we were able to get a deck overlay instead of a whole new deck. We needed a whole new deck that would have sat for a couple months and had to design a deck in it.
Right.
The pain. But the benefit to this is we had a hole here and we had some piling underneath that needed some concrete repairs too, so our crews jumped out there quick and was able to do some work and were able to pour the concrete straight down because it's difficult to get concrete in these on a deck, so gave us the opportunity to get that done anyway.
That's looking at the right side.
Yeah. So this is where they did that patch first and then they come back and overlay everything with the brand new overlay on top. This is S-14, south of Nevada, Berry Patch Road just south of it. This one looked worse starting out, but we knew the deck was in better shape from dragging it with the chain. So there was no issues with that one. It had the areas they jackhammer out, and then you overlay it, and it bumps it up an inch or so, so we have to put the asphalt wedges on the end so there's no bump on the ends, and it rides really nice. So we got two bridges. Hopefully get another 20, 30 years of life out of those bridges.
The other bridge that has started is down by Maxwell on 660th. It's on the northeast corner of Maxwell. This is one of your favorite pictures.
I love those, yeah. That's just the way to repair a bridge right there. Let's take an old sign underneath it.
Won't be able to show that one anymore because that bridge is gone. They started construction. The piling is all in. But this is just this week, so that's the stage we're at right now. That was this one right down here. Most of the other ones are those precast box culverts, and we're not sure when the contractor is going to be in to do those, but there's one on 19th Street that's a pipe replacement. There's going to be a twin pipes that replace a bridge, so that'll be closed for a month or two here. They were hoping to start in July, but a utility slowed them down, utility relocation, so hopefully they'll start in August on that one. Let me move on. Just a real quick update on the construction designs we have going. Working on the Grant Avenue paving we just talked about, and then the West 190th Bridge replacement. Designs are pretty well complete on those. Also, the 600th Avenue paving, pretty well complete on those plans as well. We're going to go ahead and start buying right away on that, hopefully next week. So we're on track to get those both paved next construction season.
Outstanding.
By the Avenue plan?
Yeah, 600
yeah.
North.
Yeah. Me too.
FY16 budget, just quick comments on that. We reached the end of the budget year. We came in way under our budget, which is good, but that doesn't mean we didn't get things done. The shortfalls, construction-wise, construction falls right in the middle of fiscal year, so we never know which year the money's going to come out of. We had $750,000 come out of the FY15, so that's why it didn't come out of this budget year, but the work got done sooner than expected, so that's why we didn't need as much money as we budgeted for there. At $150,000 worth of fuel savings, probably need to budget a little bit lower for fuel if it stayed down.
Where were we this year? $350 a gallon? Where did we budget this year? Remember?
Yeah, it was right around
$350, and I think we did safely drop that.
Are dropping that down. We have roughly $500,000 a year in fuel costs. So. Another $60,000 for the pipeline inspection. It didn't happen this fiscal year, plus we moved that funding to the general fund now, so it won't come out of our budget at all, but we originally had budgeted out of our budget. That's money that gets reimbursed by the pipeline in the end, but it has to have a pass-through.
Which is why we moved it to the general fund. It's just money in, money out.
And then the $350,000 for the Kelly shed, that'll get carried over into this next year. So
yeah, and let's talk just a minute about where we are on that. We've got an agreement in principle with Iowa State University. They have asked at this point that we at least wait until crops come out before we look at building that. So that was $350,000 that we had budgeted trying to get the project done in FY16. Now it looks like it'll be FY17, at least late this fall before we get going there. But it seems to be moving ahead.
And we have $350,000 in our FY17 budget already for the next shed, so we can either delay that one or amend budget to try to get them both done at the same time. But we can.
And that one's enrolled, and so we just need to have that conversation. But that would be a late FY17 project, so spring of FY17. We're still talking about trying to get the Iowa State one done in calendar year 16 if we can.
Yep. And then overtime, I wanted to just touch on, we budgeted $50,000 for overtime. That's mostly winter-type work, snow and ice control, and we pretty much hit right on that $50,000 mark this year. About an average, wasn't a severe winter, but we had a lot of snow and ice events that we had to be out working overtime for. You already touched on the secondary road shed by Kelly. Say we're working on that agreement with ISU. Once we get that reached, hopefully when crops are out, we can start that construction. New traffic count maps. Just wanted to touch base on those. They just came out. The DOT counts our gravels once every 4 years. No big surprises. A few I wanted to point out. Gilbert Road, we have this gravel road that heads out to the ISU horticulture farm.
it actually dropped. It says 440. Last year was about 540, so it's dropped a little bit, but that's a lot for a gravel road, so we've had difficulty maintaining that. But
Iowa State really wants that road paved out to the Hort Farm. Real preliminary conversations. When Paul was visiting with them, and what I've continued in my visiting with them was, that's a road that if Iowa State wants paved, they're going to have a lot of skin in the game to get it paved. But that will be a conversation that we'll have in years to come.
That university discussion paving, it brings up 1 mile stayed the same. This mile bumped up almost 100 vehicles a day. It's up to 100, and I can't read that.
That 260th you're circling right now?
Yeah, that's 260th.
Yeah.
But the second mile bumped up almost 100 vehicles a day. So it's up to 160, I believe, is what it is now.
Marty, where we are right now is we've got money in the budget to pave 530, which is University,
right,
south from the city of Ames to the corner of 260th. We have not committed what happens from there. As I see it, either you're going to pave from that corner on 260th over to South Dakota, or you're going to pave from that corner south into Kelly,
yeah,
to the Kelly Blacktop. They both have some interesting logistical issues, and so that's a conversation that future boards will have to have when we look at our five-year calendar.
And the other one I wanted to point out was 590th between Lincoln Highway and Highway 30. There was 30 vehicles last go around, now it's up to 230. So
I think that changes somewhat, or at least I want to see if it changes when we get 600 paved,
yeah,
right there a mile, right, to the west. Our problem there is the bridge, right, Darren?
On 590.
On 590.
Which is okay.
That's where better
is, right, right.
And for some reason they did not count 600, so I don't have any updated numbers on that. On another area, I've been watching this area down by Slater. It's a mile north of the pavement. There's apparently a newer winery and a wedding reception area over in Boone County that I get some requests on putting stop signs. So I'd wait to see what the new traffic counts. They did not move. They stayed at 140, 130, so I'm not real sure what I'm going to do yet with the stops there. The other area is Dream Lake. This is Dream Lake right here. That bumped up about 100 vehicles a day, up to 260.
Why would that have bumped up?
I don't know.
I can't figure out what's going on out there that would make the traffic go up there. Yeah, there's nothing new, is there?
The only thing I can think of is if Highway 69 was under construction at that point last summer when they counted.
Yeah. Well, let's just monitor that one, because that one doesn't make any sense at all to me.
That's just the road that would be difficult to pave because it just doesn't go anywhere.
Right.
But it's something to keep an eye on. Moving on to a couple of DOT projects I wanted to update you on. The Kegley Bridge on Highway 69, we knew it would be an issue with the gravel roads in the area. It's completely closed, so all the traffic, the detour is over to the interstate, but when you get over here back to Ames, it's difficult to get back to Ames, so people don't like to use the detour. So a lot of the traffic's using the gravel roads around here, and a lot of dust issues, so finally DOT convinced, they put a lot of dust control down on the miles around it, and they even went even further because the complaints kept coming. With as dry as it's been, it's difficult for us to maintain a gravel road. When you get the rains, that's when you blade the road, then it compacts down well. But if you don't have rain and blade it, you just create deeper washboarding because there's nothing.
So we got some huge washboarding in a lot of areas, but 530th up there is just.
Yeah, we're keeping up with it. It's still, but it's not a good situation, but it's not a lot of alternatives. And don't have pictures of the stuff down south. The DOT is working on 260th, and they are bumping up the big flyover bridge, the I-35 to 30 flyover bridge. The grading's actually going to start on that this fall. It wasn't scheduled till next year, but they're going to get an early start on that. So you'll start seeing grading a little further.
When do they close the I-35 to 30 access?
That, I don't believe that'll start till next year. That they're going to do the preparation grading this year, which I don't believe will cause any closures.
Okay.
Pipeline update. Had some discussion with that this morning.
but this is the CIFCO substation. They built the end of 303rd. It's pretty well complete, and now the pumping station's construction started just to this. It'd be just to the east of that.
But not just to the north of that. So I've been picturing it that it was going to be on the north side of the power station. It's really on the east side.
Seeing most of work take place just on the east side of the substation there. And they did rock the road. This is before it got rocked. This is the Level B road that heads back to it. It's all rocked now. Hopefully before too long they'll get their easements in place so we can just vacate it and have it be a private road.
Yeah.
We did get the dust control down on 570th, the north-south road that this connects onto for the hauling of the rock back there. That was an issue starting out with. But
we had one day of real trouble.
We had that embargo that we could put out, and we put the embargo out, and that stopped all truck traffic.
It's amazing how quick they responded once you embargoed it.
Just wanted to, on the pipeline, the latest I've heard for construction in Story County for the pipeline portion is early August.
Yep.
So we've got about a month to go on that.
Update for the board. I've asked Deb Shildroth to pull together our staff that are impacted in their jobs by the pipeline just as a discussion group. Deb, I think you guys are going to get together and just make sure everybody on our staff has the same information of what's happening. First meeting is Thursday of you guys, and it's tomorrow. And so I just want you two to know that I asked that happen. Just, I don't like the idea of, well, for me it started with the E911 signage. I didn't like the idea that some of our staff were doing one thing and others didn't know about it until after the fact and how that impacts us. So I want Darren and Mike Cox and Leanne Harder and Deb and who else is it? Jerry Moore? And just to have a conversation to make sure everybody's on the same page of what is happening, not making any decisions or anything like that.
Sounds good.
A few drainage issues, just to cover real quick. This is Brecky's feed store in the background. This is 570th R70, just to the north of Highway 30 intersection. We had a utility go in here last fall. Mm-hmm.
Wait, that's 580.
Right. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Is that right?
The yeah. R70.
You said 570.
580. Yeah. R70, 580. Right. Utility went in here. This area does not drain without the tile that's underneath, and they cut the tile, created a pond out here. The property owner was obviously not happy about it. Worked with the utility to get in here to fix it. They came in at least twice and didn't get the issue fixed. I don't know what they did underground, but they didn't get it fixed. We had issues getting them back, so we eventually went in and did it ourselves just a couple months ago. And yeah, that's the line they put in. You can see it going right through the tile. They bored it under, but they didn't get the bore deep enough. So they actually hit it in a couple spots. So we have pictures, so they're going to be paying the bills for it.
Good.
But the landowner, they're still in the process of suing the utility. They threatened to sue the county. I haven't heard any more about that. Just to make you aware, we don't have a lot of liability, in my opinion, there, because we didn't do that.
Well, we did what we could do, and we're billing the utility back for the work we did.
Right. And there's another utility on the south side of Highway 30 that broke the tile on that. That was a DOT issue, so it was broken multiple places. It was a mess for quite a while, unfortunately. But we did what we could to get it open as soon as we could. This is DD Drainage District number 5. This is just south of the Shipley pavement. There's four of these letdown structures that got completely eroded out. We're going to have a contractor in here doing our box cord on that this fall. I might see if, since they have excavated right in the area, if they can help work on this, and we'll get a cost for you that the district can approve. It doesn't necessarily have to be let. It should be low enough cost, but we'll try to get those fixed then. I was waiting on that whole grant discussion that we've had. If it's going to be a big project, we can tie it into that, but it doesn't sound like that's headed that direction. And then the last one is up in Fernald. This is where we've had this big tree. This is the district tile again that heads up through Fernald that drains Fernald. This tree roots keep getting in this tile. Came up again this spring. We have plans to put a solid tile through here. Our issues, after we got it located, the red flags is the district tile, and it's close enough to the pavement
and there's utilities on both sides. There's water line and electric. We'd have to dig a really steep trench. We couldn't slope it back like we would with our crews. We don't have storing boxes and stuff. And that tile is 8-9 foot deep, so we can't get down in there and fix that ourselves, unfortunately. But the property owner wanted something done immediately, so we went and jetted it again. That's about $750 a shot when we jet the roots out. But that'll get us another 2 or 3 years. It bought us time anyway to get this figured out. We're going to have to take some bids from the contractor that can get in here with probably shoring boxes and get this stretched.
And we don't have the authority as trustees to demand that tree come down. I know the homeowner doesn't want that tree to come down,
right.
But if we're spending $1,000 every couple years,
I think that'll come up again, because I'm going to get a cost from the contractor and bring that to the trustees. And when you see that cost is only going to get spread to these. It's a sub-district, so it's going to be a small area that cost gets spread.
Right. All his neighbors get to pay every time this happens. It just seems to me that I like trees, but it seems to me it's time for that tree to come down.
But when we get those costs, I'll bring it back to the trustees. I just want to give you a heads up on why we haven't replaced that tile yet with a solid tile with our own crews. It's not something we can do. That is all I had. I just updated our second application of dust control goes down July 27th. This year we need dust control.
Yeah,
we need a little rain out there to help rejuvenate the dust control too. But
we need rain for more than just our roads. Question for Darren.
No, graduate report.
Darren, thanks.
That's good.
No other reports. Public forum number 2. This is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items not on today's agenda. Board may not take any action to their comments due to the open meeting requirements of the open meeting law, but we may do so in the future. Anybody wishing to address us on any topic? Seeing no one.
Liaison assignments.
Wayne.
Pass.
Marty.
Okay.
Just a note, Board of Health, I got Board of Health today. That one could be interesting if you guys bring your popcorn. And I mentioned already that Deb's gathering with a group of our staff just to make sure that everybody is aware of what's going on with the pipeline. Announcements, Wayne.
A couple, and maybe Marty can fill in a little bit more on this. I'm not so much of an announcement, but an FYI. I want to take this opportunity to really mention the passing of Wally Loney, longtime mayor of McCallsburg, and I believe Marty told me today that his visitation is 4 o'clock. Was it 4 to 7?
The visitation will be at Bethesda Lutheran this afternoon from 4 to 7.
And
the service itself will be also at Bethesda tomorrow afternoon at 1 o'clock.
Those of you that never met Wally, you missed out.
Right.
He was one of a kind.
Yeah. And I remember last year he was the first person that received the Citizen of the Year Award for his long standing service and commitment. And then I would be remiss if I didn't put a shout out, because I'm a sports enthusiast, to really congratulate Harrison Barnes, our Ames native, that looks like he's going to sign a $94 million offer for 4 years to play for the Dallas Mavericks. So even though I've got a Golden State shirt, I'm cherish that, but I'm probably going to have to buy a Dallas shirt. So floating between them and the Bulls.
I can't believe he made $30 million by turning down what Golden State offered him earlier.
So I think it's important that they like that. And then for me personally, I will be attending the ISAC Board of Directors meeting this Thursday. One of the agenda items there is I serve on the Coast Guard meeting, which is the technology group, and this will be our annual report to the board, talking about what we've basically accomplished. We've had strategic planning, looking at our missions, a statement, and hopefully the board will approve what we're doing, and then we'll be able to continue to do the Pay It Forward program, where some of our IT professionals do go out to individual counties to do audits and other services where they don't have a strong IT presence. So Robin has kind of asked if he's going to give the report, but since I'm on that committee and on the board, I'll probably put at least my 2 cents in on how we got where we are and when we started, almost in 2004. So just want to show you.
Thanks, Wayne.
Any announcement, Party?
No, I would just dovetail in with what Wayne said about Mayor Loney. And the fact that having known him for a good portion of my life, he's a great man. And I will be making a personal effort, and I encourage everybody else to go up and either do the station or service itself, because that was a genuine special man.
He loved McCallsburg. You can always count on him for that. Take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Adjourn. Four calls.